Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And it's a podcast that's hosted by me, Kyle Sconewill, and my longtime friend from work, Luigi Earl. look at that stash. It's unbelievable.
It's taken over. But
the room, now it's just, your life, your face, it's taken over everything.
I just have to let it happen now.
For anyone not watching, you are missing out right now. This stash has grown to epic proportions. I mean, the edges of it now far exceed your mouth. It's almost mustache twirling villain. If you wanted
I know.
You almost could.
It's like if someone could just take me back to like 2012, I could get a job at Barista Parlor just like that.
Oh, that is so true. Like, Nashville deep cut. I love it. I love local inside Nashville jokes.
There was that year where it was just like coffee shop city. Like whatever, we would all throw on the coolest clothes we had and go and like pay way too much money for a cup of coffee.
Two of my closest friends.
Probably in like this era, it would actually be a cheap cup of coffee.
Yeah, true. Two of my closest friends worked at Barista and Frothy, and it was always like Frothy, Crema, Barista. Those are kind of the ones you went to. And one of my friends actually served Tom Hanks. So even Tom Hanks had gotten the memo. You go to Barista Parlor when you're in town. Apparently.
He probably took his typewriter there.
Yeah.
Just going all in.
I had two things. One, I'm just going to say this because this episode is going to be dated, so this won't totally fit, but my Seattle Mariners have won the American League West. And so like, if you're listening to this now, they may have already been eliminated in the playoffs, but you're thinking, Kyle, cool. That's a cool thing. What you're not knowing is they haven't won the AL West since 2001. The last time happened, I was 13 years old. That's it. It's been literally 24 years, so it's a massive deal. That's why I'm wearing my Mariners shirt today. But again, they could be eliminated by the time you're listening to this. That's the first thing. Second thing is, I went to Disney on Ice.
Yeah, you did.
Have you ever seen it?
I haven't, and I have some questions that I'm sure you'll answer. But is it like whenever I was growing up, or I guess whenever I was first aware of Disney on Ice, I think it was all kind of what I would think of as the Disney characters. But now that Disney also encompasses like Star Wars and Marvel, do characters from those franchises make an appearance at all?
No, I don't know if my one show is the same as every show across the country. I don't know that. Cause I got a Frozen show for the first half, intermission, and then Encanto. So I'm sure that's okay. They don't only tour that. I'm sure sometimes you can see, so they had like Mickey and Minnie and a few other just generic Disney characters come out and kind of introduce it. Then they do a fast Frozen thing, intermission, Mickey and Minnie come back out again. And then they do Encanto. And then at the very end, randomly, they brought out a bunch of the princesses, which was like the star of the show. Like it was unbelievable that they pulled that ace, at the very end. But,
is Violet into princess stuff?
She's so into princess stuff. So I could share some photos with you. She's just locked in.
I love it.
And like, you know, when like the princesses would come up to like the corner of the ice and stand and wave, we're in a giant arena, right? But she's waving back at them as if like it's directly to her, you know?
I love that. I love that.
And immediately, mom, look, there's Jasmine. Oh, mom, look, this is like just constantly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just glued
that's really the perfect age for that sort of thing where it's like you can comprehend what you're seeing, but I think it's still like, I remember going to Disney World and meeting like Ariel. And I think at that point I was like four in my mind, like I was meeting like the right. character from the movie, like stepping out of the screen and talking to me.
She's
so it's like you're not
right.
at that point yet where you have the.
It's the perfect cynicism. Age. Yeah, it's the perfect yeah. age. She said to me, like, she says things like, oh, these princesses skating aren't the real princesses. These are just people dressed up like them. But in saying that, she's almost implying that the real princesses are there out are. There somewhere. You know, it's like she doesn't right. fully get that they're not real, but she does. I think she gets they're not real, but then when she meets them at Disney yeah. World, she's a little bit like, oh, you know, maybe it is real, you know?
Right. Especially so, in that context. Yeah, that's cool, man.
The only other thing I'll say as an adult, I'm not some Disney adult, but man, I kind of love that the entire brand is built off dreams and excellence. Like even when you go yeah. to Disney on Ice, it is so excellently done. When's the last time you've been to Disney World, by the way? Like,
dude, way too long. I've actually kind of been craving going back. The park's changed a ton. I mean, it's probably 2017. Was the last time I went.
It's just like as a business guy, I'm always struck by how much care they have in every aspect of it. The landscape, yeah. the lines, what happens in the lines when you have to wait. And then you go to Disney on Ice, it's like the performances, how they have it choreographed, little fireworks that are inside the arena, and like mm-hmm. how they make Elsa's castle come to life. It's really quite something, actually. To quote the other guys, wow, the pageantry. The costumes. Wow. What a musical. You totally undersold it. Anyways, there you go. Tangent over.
You know, that's part of the reason I asked about Violet being into princesses is I was just talking to Candace yesterday. We're going through kind of the last batch of baby shower stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And just a lot of like unpacking clothes and books and gadgets that Candace tells me like the purpose of, and
sure,
which is great. Like the stuff that exists now versus what existed like 20 years ago is wild.
Sure.
But as part of that, we were talking about like someone got the baby a little like Spider-Man shirt, and I was wondering, you know, as like a little girl versus a little boy, like in my family, I was super into superhero stuff. My sister was super into like princess stuff, but obviously I don't think that it's always that straightforward from like a, you know, gender normative perspective. And then I was thinking about how like Violet's gotten really into like the Disney Spider-Man, what, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends?
Spidey. Show. His Amazing Friends.
Spidey.
Yeah. Yep.
And then I was just, this is why I'm bringing this up. It made me think of what Pete has been texting us. And I hadn't told Candace yet, but I love that Pete's oldest is going through like a Galactus phase.
Oh yeah, that's the best like, of all phases.
He's been texting us about, it's so funny. Yeah. Like, of like, she has to be in the like 0.1% of small yeah. children that are like really into Galactus. I it sounds like it's in part because of our friends from work t-shirt.
Yeah, because of the shirt he said. Yeah,
right.
He said when we watched Lilo and Stitch the other week, they talked about the Intergalactic Council, and she started asking about Galactus again.
I love it. Like that's the.
Right.
That's the dream. I mean, that's what I'm aiming for.
That's usually the order, you know. Rapunzel.
Yeah.
Jasmine. Spider-Man.
The Devourer.
Exactly. The Devourer of all.
That's yeah. Cool. I'm like, now I have to like one up it and get Betty like really into Phil Coulson. That's like,
please.
How niche can I get?
I'm trying to think of the deepest cut. A frost giant, maybe. Just generic Laufey. Frost giant. Laufey.
Laufey Stan.
She's the biggest fan of Laufey. Or one of the dark elves, Malekith. All right, today we wanted to spend a few minutes here kind of just answering this question. You asked me this actually the other day. What do you, Robbie Earl, hope to see in Spider-Man Brand New Day? And I liked the premise because I don't think it necessarily has to be bold predictions, like hot takes. Right. And I don't think it's necessarily what is going to happen. I'm not trying to predict the future. It's just, right, as we've been in that world a little bit and you're thinking about it and you're seeing some stuff online, what do you hope to see? And I feel a little bit more equipped to answer this having just read Spider-Man Blue on Friends from Work Plus. And
yeah,
and I'm playing through the video game again on YouTube, by the way. If nice. You want to watch me play through it and hang out, I'm streaming it on YouTube when I play.
Man, you know, I remember when you said you were going to do that. It really does feel like there's a lot of potential synergy there between the first game and the, like, the more that I hear about the movie. And I love that because
it does. Tombstone, by the way.
Yeah.
Was just cast. Yeah.
And is it confirmed that we have Mr. Negative, or is that just a rumor?
Rumor. Not confirmed.
Okay.
But somebody thought they saw the demon logo on like one of the tanks or something. I don't know. That's all hearsay at this point.
Sure.
But if Mr. Negative was in it, that'd really be a massive crossover.
Well, yeah. I mean, it would also be the biggest.
I mean, I guess him and Norman Osborn are probably the two main. Well, and Doc Ock, I guess. Those three are the three main characters, essentially, of the video game.
Yeah, I think it would certainly make sense if like Cretton wanted to have any kind of like connection between Shang-Chi and Spider-Man. He could kind of do some cool stuff with Mr. Negative there. Just because, like, I don't know, like maybe it's somehow connected to the Ten Rings organization that like sort of succeeds. Wenwu, after he dies and like his daughter takes over, like maybe there's, I don't know. There are cool ways to kind of, to have, just given that like Shang-Chi really is the first one to introduce these style, like gangs with the martial arts and all that. So it could be like a fun. But
Mr. Negative is interesting because I don't know him from the comics. I only know him from this game. I've never heard of him before this game. So I don't know.
He's a fairly recent invention with him.
Is there normally a tie-in with? So I'm gonna spoil the game for a second. I'm gonna spoil the game. So spoiler warning here. But they tie those three characters together because Mr. Negative. Well, let me back up. Otto, Octavius, and Osborn apparently meet in college and start Oscorp together, hence the O's is how they say it in the game. And so they're working together. They have a massive fallout. Osborn goes on to become mayor. Otto is like struggling to keep his think tank open, etc. And so they kind of have a thing. But then on top of that, Mr. Negative, Martin Lee, is this like really good dude who's like helping out the homeless shelter. But this other side of him, where he turns negative, is caused from an experiment that Norman Osborn did to him when he was a kid and caused him to kill his parents. Like he himself kind of blows up and kills his parents. It's a really traumatic backstory. So he's on basically like this other half of him's on this vengeance tour against Norman Osborn. And I don't know that they can do it better. I don't know if that's the comics history, but it's an unbelievably moving story because Norman's in power and Martin Lee is not, but he finds a way to take him down essentially, but just ends up wreaking a ton of havoc. Again, spoiler alert, kills Miles's father in an effort to kill Norman Osborn, like causes a lot of problems. And then more spoilers here, they actually redeem that. Miles like essentially forgives him eventually in the second game. It's kind of cool. And Mr. Negative almost turns and kind of helps at the very end. It's just a great story. So I don't know how that ties in the comics, but they obviously could do some version of that here. And I think it'd be really fun.
There's a lot of, that's one of those characters that was introduced sort of in a certain way. And it's a Dan Slott creation, that I think over the course of Dan's run, it got a little muddied. And so I actually do think that the video game, like there are elements of the comics origins that are really cool. And I think it would just be a matter of them picking which one to lean into. because they're kind of different. Like, they're not contradictory, but I think thematically they can be. Okay. Like, there are times where Mr. Negative feels very much like the kind of Jekyll and Hyde thing, you know, where it's like he's good, or he's like, when he's negative, he's evil. And he doesn't always remember. Like, I think that there's a period where he doesn't know that he's Mr. Negative.
Right. But when he goes into that zone, that's kind of what happens in the game. He almost blacks out.
I kind of like that dynamic, just because it makes it a real, like, it adds that level of mystery and tension. But then there are other times where he's just a bad guy, and he powers up and does bad guy stuff. So I like the former better. I do think the game did that well. But again, I think that's actually, not to go on a Mr. Negative tangent, but I think that's
actually even be in the movie.
Right, right. But I think that it's a good way of starting this, because all of that, I think, is what I'm looking for in terms of a smaller scale problem, like a more ground level Spider-Man, a lot of the stuff that we've talked about. And everything that I'm seeing, Greg was nice enough to put together a list of the 100% confirmed characters, as well as some cast members that we don't know who they're playing yet. I think for our purposes, just the characters that we know are going to be showing up make me really excited on that point, because obviously we have John Bernthal as the Punisher, which leans heavily towards street level stuff. We have Matt Gargan coming back as Scorpion, I would assume he's the Scorpion. And then, yeah, Lonnie Lincoln as Tombstone. So I think that those are the kind of like quasi, I guess Frank Castle or Punisher isn't a villain, even though he was originally introduced as a Spider-Man villain. But so there's that kind of like ground level thing. And I love all of that. I want a Spider-Man that is able to kind of figure out what his contribution is supposed to be. You know, like I think so much of the Watts films were him figuring that out and swinging between like wanting to be Iron Man and then wanting to not be Iron Man, and then having to kind of figure out that, like, you know, the power responsibility idea, and like No Way Home brought that stuff together, and ending with him kind of realizing that like his responsibility is in some ways to kind of go it alone.
His responsibility is a little bit to the people of New York, including his friends, right, and how he walks away from MJ at the end there. I think that's the takeaway, is like the police scanner. It's more that we always talk about ground level and street level, like you just said, but I think it's more that, summing it up in that his responsibility is not to the Avengers. It's to the people of New York from now on.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think the best Spider-Man stories in the comics for me are the ones where he is essentially, it's either something that isn't like an Avengers or Fantastic Four level threat, or it's something where for some reason no one else can help him, and it's kind of Spider-Man against everyone. Like, it's sort of that like Captain America in the Endgame battle thing is sort of Spider-Man, like going all the way back to the sort of height of the Stan Lee, Steve Ditko era with the Master Planner saga, the scene that like him lifting the rubble, or the comic to that scene comes from. Like, it's this idea that like it comes down to just Spider-Man against these like impossible odds, that's having to do something that's going to stretch him to like the brink, if not beyond, and he's kind of willing to give himself up for it. But he's also kind of like, he's really strong, but he's not like Thor or the Hulk, so he's vulnerable. Like, he can be like cut and stabbed and shot. And it's just this, like, I like the idea of getting like him away from the, like the wider MCU, but also like figuring
firmly
out
still how, like, existing in it.
Yeah, like figuring out what that means, I guess, because like I like that Mark Ruffalo is showing up in this movie, which is the kind of crazier, like, of everything else we've listed, all kind of makes sense within that framework.
So let's pause for a second. Let me back you up. One, I think a key thing is he can't call other Avengers. He and we as viewers can't feel right. the need that he has to call upon someone else. So I'm with you. That's like what is so special about the Raimi trilogy yeah. is there aren't other superheroes. So there's no backup plan. So I think this is like a unique moment in time within the MCU where they can do that and have it be explainable. I think nobody knows yeah. who he is. I don't think he's built a relationship with the Thunderbolts, this new version
right.
that people don't know.
Right.
And if the rumors are true about Hulk being in it, like you're saying, there are rumors.
I think that's confirmed.
Okay, no, sorry. Hulk is confirmed. He's in it, I think. But if the rumors about him being Savage Hulk are true.
Right, right.
If they're going to go back to a out of control Hulk, then I think that also still plays into what I'm talking about, which is that you don't call a Savage Hulk for help. Meaning Bruce may not be in this movie as a Tony stand-in for Peter. It may not be like, it may be that Hulk is not a villain, but out of control maybe, or something
right.
in this movie. I also think the fact that Punisher's in it, and then I've heard these rumors that like their end game is to get him interacting with Kingpin, that Kingpin needs to be in these movies. So who knows if maybe secretly they work out some deal and he is in it or something. Like you wonder if that's coming at some point, in which case I think, first of all, like I said, yeah, you got to leave it in a spot where he can't call for help. That's the first thing. The second thing is I'm really interested with how many characters are rumored to have been in this. Like you just mentioned, like Tombstone, Scorpion, right. If Hulk is somewhat of a quasi-villain, if Punisher is somewhat of a quasi-villain, you're talking about maybe a few other cameos here and there of villains. Then I guess my hope would be, because the game does this, the game has all the villains in it. Like for a while, the game is just, you think you're working with some of these people, but then you see a couple cameos of Shocker is a cameo, basically. Yeah. Tombstone's almost a cameo, kind of a small role. It's like a side mission. But then by the end, again, spoilers, all of the Sinister Six are unleashed. So you have to end up fighting Rhino and Scorpion. And so on paper, the game has almost too many characters on paper. It's almost all of the lore in one game. But because you have so much time with it, it ends up being the most fulfilling thing. It works so well. When Otto is leading the Sinister Six, it's just like, this is magnificent. Yeah. I'm not saying the movie needs that many characters. Here's the end of my whole tangent. If there are going to be a lot of characters to where it almost feels like a Sinister Six, then I don't want it to just be this film. Keep these characters around for the whole trilogy.
Yes.
The whole, like, let me live in this New York where all these characters, Vulture, Scorpion, Tombstone, they all still exist. And he doesn't just end it. He has to live with that for three movies. That's what, like, basically, you don't need to give me a ton more. I'd also throw a Black Cat in there if they somehow pull that off. But like, I think you don't add a ton more. You just kind of like have him wrestling with that for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, I do. That's exactly what I was going to say. There are times whenever I listen back to what they were trying to do with the Andrew Garfield franchise. And I think Sony really obviously fumbled things with how much they tried to pack into that second movie for setup. But I do like that they were trying to do something like that, like flesh out a whole universe where these characters exist. Because, you know, the Spider-Man comics, like, again, if you look back to the original Lee Ditko run, like, you have 3-4 appearances of most of these villains. Like, he puts them in jail, they get out of jail, they fight. It's like, the one thing that the Raimi films kind of started that, well, I say that, I guess that really goes back to the Batman 89 film, but it's this kind of one and done idea. Like, you've got the hero versus the villain, and then the villain normally dies somehow at the end, and then you have like another villain pop up in the next movie. But it kind of makes it feel sort of like these are the only villains that the hero ever fights. Like everyone else is you kind of just assume like a common crook, and then every now and then you have like the Joker or the Penguin. And I like the idea of fleshing out this world and giving Spider-Man his own ecosystem of villains and kind of like nemeses, because it just makes it like there's something about Spider-Man swinging up to a scene and like the Rhino's like breaking into a bank or something, and he already has like banter with the Rhino, you know, like each other.
In the game too, when the Shocker, he's like, come on, Herman, we don't need to do this again. Like, this is not how you normally act. You know, by the way, Mr. Negative had gotten to him, that's why. But he's like, this is not how you normally, you know,
Like
those relationships having been already developed in a fun way, that makes the banter, that is what the banter is almost always, essentially.
Like it lets you, I don't know, it lets you kind of feel, it feels more lived in, I guess, that version of New York when you know that Spider-Man's like kind of having to wrangle these people all the time. And again, it kind of gives him something that is like these villains are obviously meant to correspond to his power level. So it's kind of like you don't have to deal with the, oh, what is Spider-Man doing against Thanos? Which then also when you do see Spider-Man against someone like Thanos or Doctor Doom, if we go there, it kind of gives you that sense of scale that you need, where it's like, oh, this is like he is out of his league. And that's another dynamic that's good, but it only works if you show him in
his league,
that environment. Yeah.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about on this front, I think a couple of interesting things kind of more relationally. Zendaya and Jacob Batalon, I think, are both confirmed to return as MJ and Ned Leeds.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? What do you want to see from that relationship?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know yet.
No take?
Well, I've told you that I know you kind of hope they move off that a little bit, and my wife kind of hopes they lean into it. She's mad that MJ's not a part of it. I think my gut tells me I'd be okay with them moving off that. Like those aren't his friends anymore. My hesitation is, does that then belittle what I love so much about the original trilogy? Like, if he's just willing to just move off his best friends that easily, friends for life, is that a little weird? But I think, like, even like Ned Leeds as a character just feels like it works well as a younger character. Like, like that reminds me of his high school era. And instead of him like aging up with them, I think I'd rather it just be a whole new batch of like I've thrown out, again, not to obsess over this, but like Ana de Armas playing Black Cat. So that just, it the whole tone shifts way more mature, if that makes sense, than like high school romance kind of thing. Even though I love the high school romance, I'm just saying going forward, if those characters are there, is it a little bit leaning to like the cute side of things again versus Peter's gone through it side of things, you know?
No, I think that's right because of how he and Ned and MJ's relationship was characterized. Like, it is very high school, and I think that you can obviously continue to use those characters and they have great chemistry, but I do think the dynamic has to change just because you don't have, like, you have meaningful friendships, but they look different as you get older. So I think the idea of Peter and Ned kind of having the same goofy dynamic wouldn't jive super well. So I'm curious, like, one, they're in Boston, right? They're at MIT.
So yeah, right.
I'm not sure what the connecting point will be. But I think for me, it might just be a clever way of keeping them in as characters. But maybe now, you know, Peter realizes the danger of letting anybody know who he is. And so maybe it's something where Peter reestablishes a relationship with Ned and MJ somehow, but he's just very guarded about how much Spider-Man access he gives because of how dangerous that, you know, it's like Ned and MJ almost died like three times, like every movie because of Spider-Man, because of Peter being Spider-Man. So I think that that's an important thing to capture because Spider-Man, I feel like more than any other superhero, it's there's so much tension around the secret identity piece. Mm-hmm.
And they have that back
now. I do
now.
Think
it's not going to be, and it's not going to be unveiled quickly. I promise. They know
right.
that.
I mean, that would be that. I feel like that would be a waste, but yeah, you're right. I mean, I would even like for them to not do it in the first movie at all.
I don't think at all. I think it'd be fun to see Tom Holland's Peter Parker, whether he's working at the Bugle or something. It'd be fun to see like Peter Parker have to have a job.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah.
Man, like, think about that for a second. We talk about the money, but for the whole first trilogy, he's in high school. He's not worried about money. And then as he gets a little bit older, Tony Stark is funding everything. So he doesn't have to worry about that. We haven't even ever seen him work a job like that. But if he's like actually, and you know, if you don't want to do the Bugle, maybe he's not a photographer. Maybe it's some more, I don't know, modern day thing. But whatever it is, if he's a blogger or something, like show him having to like grind out articles or photos or. Here's the thing. I just read Spider-Man Blue. MJ in that is like this life of the party kind of person. There could be an interesting dynamic in this movie if Peter Parker, Tom Holland's, lets Zendaya go. They go to MIT, Ned, whatever. Couple years later, they've clearly also aged up. So, you know, the tone of the whole movie is a little more mature, but they also are. Like, Zendaya is, in real life, she's what, 25? You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
she's not
4 years older. Yeah.
Right. Okay, maybe even, I don't know how old she is. Hey, Siri, how old is Zendaya? Here we go.
Is 29 years old.
29 years old. Okay, so so clearly in the age I want Spider-Man to be in this movie-ish, right?
Yeah.
So what you could do is that she doesn't know Peter Parker. She goes to MIT, blah, blah, blah. But what if she comes back like more like life of the party? She's kind of grown into like this really confident girl. And let's say Sadie Sink's character, who's in this movie, is Gwen Stacy. Peter falls in love with Gwen Stacy, but now all of a sudden Zendaya shows back up. Peter has a really complicated history with this because he used to have a relationship with her, but she doesn't know it. That could be a kind of Spider-Man Blue dynamic.
Yeah, that is a good like little love triangle dynamic.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And she's just falling for Peter for the first time in her mind.
Yeah. But Peter would know all the stuff about her that she doesn't know about him.
Right.
Is,
but he's like, I'm with Sadie Sink now, you know, Gwen Stacy, blah, blah, blah. I don't know, maybe.
Have you seen Challengers?
No.
I forget.
But that's like the love triangle thing, right?
Well, and like Zendaya is so, there's this level of kind of confidence and like she's super stylish and cool and I could see that being...
So she could pull it off. The Spider-Man Blue MJ, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, she really does have a pretty insane amount of range when you think about her in Spider-Man versus her in Dune and then in Challengers and then Euphoria. Like, she can do all sorts of things. So I think that it would be... Especially because MJ in the comics sort of becomes a chameleon in that way. Like... and they talk about the summit Spider-Man Blue. It's like she is the life of the party, but sometimes that's also kind of like a mask and she's sort of projecting. Do you think,
it would just be interesting. Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
MJ and Ned remember working with Spider-Man kind of the way that like Happy Hogan does?
I never know this question. You asked me this about Happy too.
Yeah. I mean, because he does, I think, at the end of No Way Home, like he talks about knowing Aunt May through Spider-Man. So he remembers, I guess, going to like London, but I guess he just doesn't remember.
I guess, right?
Peter ever taking his mask off, maybe.
Right. Because their memories of any interaction weren't wiped, I guess, right? It's not like all of a sudden that whole trip is missing from their brain.
Right. So like they would maybe remember.
But that's weird because like she just like directly helped. So what would she remember? She'd remember like I helped of some sort, but then yeah, I guess she just knows it's some masked guy, I guess.
Yeah. Like because I guess that's the cleanest way of saying there aren't these like massive, I mean, because she would basically have forgotten like 2 years of her life if you just totally removed all of that stuff. So I would think that she would remember Spider-Man, like everything in Spider-Man Homecoming, I think she would remember. And then yeah. I guess, yeah, most of Far From Home and No Way Home. But then even then it gets so tricky because like whenever he gets unmasked, you know, that's a huge thing. And then you bring up like the Daredevil stuff and what does he remember? I'm not curious so much to get into the weeds of how the spell worked as much as I'm just curious to see what relationship those characters still have with Spider-Man or familiarity.
One other thing on that note too, the spell specifically, it's going to be interesting timing wise. If they make a new trilogy with Tom Holland, that the first one is pre Doctor Doom and the second one is probably pre Secret Wars as well. So does something Secret Wars change the universe so fundamentally too that like will Secret Wars have not enough of effect that they can make this trilogy kind of exactly how they intend to? You know what I'm saying? Or will there be enough ripples? Because like by the third movie, I would imagine there will be some version of Avengers or X-Men that Peter could interact with by the third movie.
Yeah.
Just given where it'd be hard to explain why they weren't there. Let's say it's 6 years from now. You know what I'm saying?
I feel like they are not going to be able to pass up on the opportunity to have a Spider-Man X-Men crossover by the time this whole thing is done. Cause that's just like, we may get some version of that in Secret Wars, but I mean, those are like the crown jewels of Marvel and they've never really gotten to interact.
So this is perfect.
I hope that Secret Wars doesn't like mess too much. I don't know. Like I'm sort of at a point where I don't want these movies to have to answer like whatever happens more. Like, I don't know. It's like, even like Secret Wars, the comic, like both versions, really the characters don't actually remember what happens for the most part. Like a few do, which I'm kind of fine with because we've gotten so many consequential moments in Marvel history that this doesn't have to be another kind of in-game Battle of New York level event in people's memories, at least, even if it is when we're in it.
The ending can almost be a little more like the ending of Loki season 2, right? Where Mobius knows, but it's just like, the world is moving on and I'm going to jump back in it essentially. And look at all the stuff that we saved, or, you know, like look at all this bad stuff we saved off, but
yeah,
I'm going to go back in the world like normal. Okay. This is perfect. This is a good way to end this because I feel like we've mostly covered what I want, which is a darker tone. You talked about the villain staying around and some banter there, like more adult Peter with that.
Yeah.
I think I want the MJ and Ned relationships to be way more distant as they're moving forward.
Yeah.
Talked about some of the fun villains, talked about the street level stuff, talked about him not having money. The last thing I think I want Norman Osborn. The more I play the game, I'm playing the game thinking like, I'm not sure that this story really even works without Norman Osborn at all. Like if you just remove him from the equation, it's such a fundamental character to this game. And then I think about how good the adaptation we've gotten in that game and then also in the Raimi trilogy as being like a huge driving force. And I don't even know if I need Green Goblin yet. I just wonder if you plant the seeds of Oscorp being there or something, just to have that also feel like home for Spider-Man.
Yeah, I wonder if they can do just because of how central that character was to the Raimi trilogy, and because he was essentially the main villain of No Way Home. I wonder if they try to do a lot of what has been done with Norman in recent years and in like the game, more with Kingpin. I mean, who also has a big role in the game, but I wonder if they like allow him to be a little bit more involved in like pulling all these strings, and maybe that means that he's like in the 90s animated show. One thing that I thought worked really well is Kingpin kind of becomes the guy that's like funding and creating a lot of supervillains to kind of like distract Spider-Man while he's doing his other stuff. And I think that that dynamic works well, because you just get the sense that he's this guy with endless resources, and he's very city focused. But yeah, I mean, I would love a Norman Osborn, kind of just a new take on it and a new take on Harry. I wonder if they're going to want to do that anytime soon. Like I part of me thinks I'm going to have to just, wait on the third Spider-Man game to get my new like Green Goblin fix.
They got to do Green Goblin in that game, right? Because that's like one of the only villains they haven't done yet.
And I think it's going to be so dark at this point, just because the series has kind of gotten darker. But yeah, in the movies, like, I hear you, and I would love that. I think if they do something like that with Kingpin, I would also be happy, because in a way, what I would like to see out of this trilogy as a whole, not tonally, because I get it, it's Spider-Man and it's different, but something that's in the kind of scope that you have with like the Dark Knight trilogy, where it's so like, in the same way that it's so Gotham focused, and it's really this kind of like war for Gotham and these different phases of Batman like rising and falling and rising again, and it feels like a complete narrative. And I feel like not the prequel trilogy, but the Watts trilogy was so much that in its own way, just focused on him kind of growing up, that I kind of like this idea. Like if they could set up this dynamic of like Spider-Man against Kingpin, in kind of a different way than Daredevil is, that would be really fun for me. But I don't know if they would give him that large of a role within the Spider-Man universe or not, since he's so much a Daredevil villain at this point.
So here's what I think is going to happen. Here's my only bold prediction for the episode, then we can end it. I think that in Daredevil season 2, Kingpin is going to step down from mayor. He's not going to get fired. I think he's going to step down as like, I've done what I've wanted to accomplish, but he's ready to do a different role. And so I think that is going to have the table cleared for that. Like he's going to go back to being underground, I think, is my first prediction. Mm-hmm. And then my second prediction is, I think you'll get one reference, cameo, or maybe a shot to a Norman Osborn in the movie. So it won't be that he's mayor yet, Mayor Osborn, it won't be, but it'll be like the table has been cleared that Fisk is not mayor. And then you'll hear like a reference to Oscorp or something, and that's it. You're not going to see him. It's just going to plant the seed for the next movie or the third movie, where he is now maybe either Mayor Osborn or he's just really powerful at this corporation, whatever. Mm-hmm. Those are my two predictions. I think they're going to happen before. When we walk out of the theater next July, those two things will have happened.
Wow. I would be very happy with those two things. And, you know, there is kind of a power vacuum left post Stark Industries. Mm-hmm. So it would kind of make sense for, I mean, sort of the way that like Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man has done it, like kind of making Osborn the like sort of Tony Stark alternative. And I don't know, maybe it is like, you kind of saw a preview of that in No Way Home, like Osborn sort of offering Peter a job.
But also like Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, you don't have to immediately make Oscorp or Osborn some evil corporation or person right away. Right. I mean, like, he's kind of helping him for a while.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to be like, look at this evil guy. I'm just saying, like, plant the seed that this one corporation is growing really quickly or whatever, you know?
No, I think, you know,
because Val's like also there with the new Avengers too. So that's another dynamic. Like, technically they own that tower. And so that is there in the background. I'm not saying Peter should call them, but I'm saying, like, there is a power vacuum that she's also stepping into. So I don't know if you just plant the seed now and then, you know, maybe that will shift. I don't know. We'll see. But yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the end of it. I'm so freaking stoked. It's going to feel so good to watch. That's,
I mean, did you, I was reading in the newsletter, this weekend, I didn't realize that Tom Holland had gotten a concussion on set.
You know how I know that? Because you haven't heard it yet, but I recorded a news episode with Greg that our listeners have already listened to now last week.
Oh, right. Yep.
And we talked about that. Yeah. Yeah. Kind of crazy.
It is crazy. I'm glad he's okay, obviously. It's also like there is something in a way that also makes me excited.
You're like, he's getting his hands dirty.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is like they're clearly, I mean, every shot I've seen of him on set, one, it looks like he's just having a blast, which makes me really happy. And two, it looks like they are really like boots on the ground doing as much as they can, like practically. And that's really fun.
All right, thanks for listening. Let us know your thoughts. What are you most excited for in Spider-Man Brand New Day? What do you hope to see? Hit us up on our website, Discord, Patreon, whatever. And we'll be back here next time, chatting with you again, back here on Friends From Work.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.